I was recently editing one of our episodes, and why did you not tell me that there was this huge brown spot? Like, what is this? I still see a little bit of it.
It's an age spot.
Why wouldn't you say something, first of all?
Okay, please. No. I got bitched out for telling you needed Botox, and now I'm supposed to tell you about your age spots?
Yeah, because this could be like, should I see a doctor? Like, look at it.
No, you're
Is it
fine.
still there?
A little bit.
What
I'm
is it?
distracted by your forehead wrinkles, though, so you can barely
I
even see it.
got that going. Maybe the wrinkles will hide whatever this brown smudge is now that I'm dealing with.
It's
So,
perfect.
I'm sure.
It's Tuesday, and you're listening to Murder Unscripted.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Murder Unscripted. I am Ed Hydock here with my amazing, wonderful, beautiful, breathtaking, angelic light of my life. By the way, Melissa writes these intros, so I just read them.
Wrote that so you could pick one of the many of my many qualities, but you can say them all.
I picked
That
them
could just
all.
be the whole episode.
You wrote them all. You didn't say that, so I picked them all.
I
So.
did parentheses.
We are in the fourth block, which means it's time for a brand new theme. And our topic of this block is one that no true crime fan will be a stranger to. I'm a survivor.
Okay, since we picked this theme, I've had this weird mashup of Gloria Gaynor's I Will Survive and Survivor by Destiny's Child, like playing in my head.
there is it is it a good is it like a good mashup? You know how they
It's
mash
such
songs
a
up?
good match. I should be a DJ. It's
You
so
should not.
good.
I've
I
seen your
should
taste in
be.
music, and you should not be a DJ.
In sync for life. Moving on.
Yes, though. Well, those songs would be perfect for this block because we are going to be covering some pretty epic survivor stories, and we're going to be talking to a friend of mine who I interviewed for an episode of Cold Case Files. Her name is Shannon Myers Barrientos, and Shannon is amazing because not only did she survive a brutal attack by a man who had already committed murder, but she has also taken that trauma and used it to kind of motivate and inspire not only Melissa and I, but also to many others.
Her story is wild. It's incredible, and it's definitely an episode you don't want to miss.
Absolutely. But while doing that, I'm also going to be covering the case of Susan Woods. And the reason is their cases are directly related. And you'll kind of see that as we go through the story, but Susan was a young woman who had an encounter with the exact same man that Shannon did, only she was not so fortunate. But Shannon's ordeal did help to bring justice to that family. So we're going to get into all that. So in week three, we're actually going to be talking to Shannon. And then in week four, we're going to finish out the block with some kind of final thoughts on the whole theme that we're doing. And as always, Melissa will bring us another kind of awesome survivor case and then a palate cleanser, which I have yet to name that segment, but because it changes every week. But I enjoy testing Melissa's true crime knowledge by trying to stump her every week. So we'll do
Trying
something
to stump her.
trying. Yeah.
Trying, yeah.
You're doing great. I'm not gonna lie, you're doing great, like creepy great.
Isn't that great though that I know that stuff, but like.
No, several people have approached me and been like, Melissa really knows a lot about true crime. Like, isn't that scary? I'm like, not really. It's like, you got to know Melissa to. But before we get into any of that, Melissa's going to kick off the block with a pretty incredible survivor story. And I'm not going to lie, these are my favorite types of cases because you have someone that doesn't die. It's just sometimes you do on the in relation to that part of the case, but there when there's a survivor, I mean, you're hearing the story now from someone who lived through it. And because 99.9% of the time they can't tell their own story, the evidence has to kind of tell what happened. So to hear about it firsthand from someone who survived these killers and these ordeals and these horrific injuries, psychological injuries, physical injuries, emotional injuries, it's a compelling topic that I am fascinated by, and I love speaking with these people. And in week four, after we hear some of these incredible stories, we're also going to dip into the psychology of what happens after you're a victim, how you can cope, how you move on. And I've seen examples ranging from lifelong unshakable trauma, where what happened to these people becomes them. But on the flip side, like we talked about Shannon, just a motivational person, someone who is inspiring and someone who can really show you how they moved on and how they can get that message to others who may have lost hope. So with all that being said, Melissa, take it away.
All right. So the survivor story I'm going to share today, it does feel like a horror movie. And before I settled on researching this specific case, I went through so many survivor stories and it was really, really difficult to just like pick one to cover. And I really wanted to share some survivor stories, though, that people may not know. There's a couple big ones that many people are familiar with. So between today and episode 4, I'm going to share some wild cases that are like serious emotional roller coasters. So be ready for that. But right. I mean, these cases are going to make you angry. They're going to make you sick, like physically ill. They will make you sad. But hopefully the biggest takeaway from today and this whole block will be inspiration. And all of these survivors have really been through hell and back, and they've witnessed the absolute worst of humanity. But Jesus, they are so strong and heroic and so inspirational. So our case today is the survival story of Christy Flynn. And the story's crazy. Christy is a brave, beautiful, bodacious, badass. And I do want to give a trigger warning. This case does deal with sexual assault and extreme violence. Horrific violence, to the point that I had to stop researching one night because I was getting sick to my stomach. So I'll warn you before we get to that part. We're not going to go into unnecessary graphic detail, but I think people need to know what she went through. Like, we can't water it down.
I agree. And this is from the get-go. Melissa and I have been on the same page about this. And it's something that came up, for example, in the Stanley Edwards murder from Block 2. And we stand by this decision then and now. I mean, murder is not pretty in any way, shape, or form. So when we talk about these cases, we're going to tell you what really happened. And it's not to shock you or gross you out or sensationalize anything. That's not the point. Because we feel that to truly understand these killers and what they're capable of, it's important to know exactly how they killed somebody, what they did to somebody, another human being. So we're going to tell it like it is.
Absolutely. But again, we will give trigger warnings because I completely understand some people need that. So, all right, we are in our case today. We are in Sulphur Springs, Arkansas. And I keep wanting to say Arkansas.
Do not say Arkansas.
Do not say Arkansas. Because I say it all the time as a joke, and then I start to think that's what it really is.
We need to see other people, I think.
Bye, Felicia. All right. So we are in Sulphur Springs, Arkansas, which is about 3.5 hours northwest of Little Rock, which is the capital of Arkansas. And Sulphur Springs is a super small town, and well, it begins as farmland. The landscape quickly morphs into like a densely wooded area, some mountains. So I watched an episode of No One Can Hear You Scream entitled Fight Like a Mother. And this was season 1, episode 5. And I streamed it on Investigation Discovery, but I think it's also on Apple TV and maybe on Amazon, depending on what Prime level you have. So the episode opens, and of course, the first thing they say is about Sulphur Springs being a small town, and I just rolled my eyes. But wait, no, like, I rolled my eyes because every show says that, but then I actually researched it, and as of the 2020 census, there were less than 500 people in the town.
All right, that counts.
Exactly. I was like, oh, okay, you guys are right. No, all right, fine. Fair. So we're going to give that to them. It's a small town.
When I was on City Confidential, I was specifically instructed not to mention that people don't lock their doors here because every town was a small town and like everyone, no one locked their doors until they did. You know, it's
exactly.
Like, but you can only, there's only so many ways to illustrate that concept because it's true. I mean, you could say it about all these small towns. These are places that are safe, but until they're not.
Until they're not. I just picture Keith Morrison saying, until it's
until
not, and a
not.
Black went picture popping up on Dateline.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to give it to Sulphur Springs, your small town. And yep. Our story takes place in the 1990s, and the population was actually a little bit higher then, but not by much. So our case today focuses on Christy Flynn, and we're in December of 1991 in Sulphur Springs. And Christy's about 21 years old, and she's a young single mom to her son, Chris. She does eventually have a daughter, but I believe she was born after this. So her son, Chris, is actually on some of the TV shows. So we kind of got to hear from him, which was awesome because he had such good insights. So it's 1991 and Christy is killing as a single mom. And like I just said, Chris shares a lot of insights and wonderful stories about how she was like super mom. Like her kids were definitely the number one priority in her life. And the love that Chris has for his mom is so evident in the TV shows. It comes through so clearly. Christy loved football, and that love for the sport was definitely passed on to her son. They liked to watch football. They liked to play football. And Christy was in really, really good shape. Like, she was a runner. She lifted weights. So Christy had a lot going for her. So it's Monday, December 9th, 1991. And Christy had taken her son, Chris, who's about 3 years old at this point, to his grandmother's house. And that's Christy's mom. So Christy's mom's going to keep Chris for a little while for some Grammy-grandson bonding.
That's the best times.
Right. And you know what? Good for Christy. Like, you need a break. No matter how much you love your kids, oof, take a break.
That's true. That's important. This is not a parenting podcast, but you know what? Make time for yourself.
Seriously. So that night, Christy decides to do something for herself, and she goes over to her friend Henry's house because there's a big football game on. And I already mentioned Christy's a huge football fan, so she's like, this is going to be great. Kind of a night away. So they're watching the game, she and Henry, and all of a sudden, I don't know if the TV went out or the power went out, but Christy's like, hell no, I need to see this game.
Any football fan understands that there is nothing worse than being into a game and it just,
Yes.
I would be at the bar too. It's like, all right, get in the car.
Yep. So that's what they decided. They're like, all right, we're going to go to this bar, watch the rest of the game. And this bar that we're talking about is like a super local hometown bar. I got the vibe that it was kind of divey, which like I'm down with. That's kind of the best kind of bar.
Oh my God.
So,
yeah.
Right. So it's like a normal hangout for Christy and Henry. They go over to the bar and for whatever reason, they do decide to drive separately. So they get to the bar, they have some drinks and they decide to play some pool. So it's a really low, chill, low key, chill night and everyone's hanging out. And then all of a sudden these three guys walk into the bar. And they go to the bar, they order drinks, but these guys are definitely not from around there. Like, no one had ever seen them before.
Oh, one of those, like, where the record screeches and everyone
yes.
just turns like, y'all aren't from around these parts, are you?
And I feel like a tumbleweed goes past, yeah. like, randomly inside the bar. I don't know
I can
why
see
it's there,
it. I can see it.
Yes.
Yeah, why would there be a tumbleweed? That's a strange
know,
place.
It always happens in the movies.
Right in the bar.
So these three random guys, and when I say guys, I really mean a grown-ass man and two teenagers. Because we have 34-year-old Jimmy Joe Winters, 18-year-old Donald Peterson, and 16-year-old Adam Travis McVeigh. And he went by Travis, so I'm going to call him Adam, because I don't care what he wants.
Yeah, it's his name.
Exactly. And side note, why the hell is a 34-year-old hanging out with two high school kids? Like, right off the bat, my brain's like, okay, this guy's a fucking loser.
Yeah, that's one of those telltale signs, like big red flag when you see this guy's not exactly admired by his peers, I would say.
Well, it made me think of the stereotypical guy who peaked in high school and now he's like in his 30s still wearing his Letterman jacket and it's like, bro, get over it. You yeah. scored one touchdown. Like, move yeah. on with your life.
Take your letter jacket off.
I have, like, a couple people I went to high school with that I'm, like, picturing them and, yikes.
Yeah.
So, these three garbage bags, they knew each other because they worked at the local salvage yard. And it was owned by one of the teenagers' dads. So, like, I get that they work together, but that's still a big age gap. Like,
yeah, you can hang out at work, but leave it at work.
Yeah. So Jimmy, Donald, and Adam order their beers, and I guess nobody cared about carding the 16-year-old. So
yeah, wasn't one 16?
Cool. Like, yeah, and one was 18, yeah. which the laws might have been different, because I know Jersey was 18 for a while. And
it is Arkansas. Is it not trash in Arkansas? I'm picturing it being a little more lax. I don't know.
But yeah, the 16-year-old, like, you have a 16-year-old.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't picture him at the bar.
I gave him a sip of beer once, and he was like, eh.
So, guess no one cared about carding him, but whatever. So, for some reason, the guys set their sights on Christy and Henry, who are playing pool. And Christy was, like, a legit pool shark, so she was super good at it. So, Henry had, like, challenged her to a game. And the three guys go over to the pool table, and they start playing with them. And, like, right away, Henry is, like, besties with these guys. This goes on for a while, but throughout the night, Christy's just getting more and more uncomfortable. Like, in an interview on one of the shows I watched, she actually says, quote, they were giving her a bad vibe, end quote. Mm. And, like, unfortunately, her gut feeling was right. Because we find out that all three of these degenerates were criminals. So the 16-year-old, literally the same age as your son, he was at the bar ready to party because he was just out on bail after being arrested for allegedly killing his stepfather.
How is he out on the streets?
I don't know. And then we never hear anything else about that. Like, I Googled it. I researched. I was on the Arkansas Department of Corrections. I can tell you everything he's done since then because it's a list. But nothing else about that. So
he must have been tried as an adult if he was out on bail and stuff. Usually it's like, I don't know, juvenile detention facilities.
I don't know, but way to go, justice system.
Yeah, really. Another win.
I can't imagine a 16-year-old. Like, I cannot imagine your son hurting a fly, let alone a human.
The only thing my son murders is every snack we have. So it's supposed to be. That's, yeah, exactly. So are you. You and Jake have very much in common. You both like snacks.
And sleeping.
Yeah, he's still asleep. He's right over
Good
there.
For him.
It's not that that means anything to our audience, but it's 9:40 a.m.
So our next guy is Donald Peterson, the 18-year-old. He was on the run after escaping from prison. So, you know, we're working with a great crew here. And our 34-year-old loser, Jimmy Joe Winters, who hangs out with, like, basically toddlers.
Children.
He was on probation. I'm not sure why, but this group was clearly a bunch of winners.
Yes.
So it starts getting late and the bar starts to close and these guys are, like, still trying to party. And Henry's like, hell yeah, like, come on back to my place. And then Henry asks Christy, can you give these guys a ride back to my place and I'll go pick up more alcohol? Because remember, they drove separately.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why he did this. As I already mentioned, and according to Christy's son, who was on the No One Can Hear You Scream episode, Chris says that throughout the night, Christy had shared her discomfort about the men with Henry and, you know, had told him that these dudes were kind of giving her a bad feeling and, like, stomach was starting to hurt about it. Like, that just anxiety, and I get that. I think we've all had that feeling about someone before when you just get that icky feeling about somebody.
You do, and I think it's kind of like, I've definitely seen it, and I can only speak about it from a guy's perspective, but, like, first of all, I think, one, that's pretty shitty of Henry to leave knowing that she felt this way about these guys. So I do think that's kind of messed up. But also, it's like, I've seen dudes like this at bars, and they're usually drunk and they're usually creeping on women. And so I can only imagine what that's like from a woman's perspective. I imagine it's a situation where you guys are always, when you go out to bars like that, especially like dive bars, are you, like, always on high alert? I know, Melissa, you spend a lot of time in CD establishments. So is that fair? Is that
the case? Under my house and your house, so yes, very seedy.
So seedy. But no, but as if you go out to bar, like, are you always on, are you always scanning and looking for danger? And I know that's just from I'm asking for your female perspective.
Yes, absolutely. Your head's always on a swivel, you're always keeping an eye out. I mean, you can't even go, like, you can't even walk away from your drink for a second. Like, it's annoying more than anything else. And I get where Christy's coming from. You and I were just talking about this the other day when I was explaining that there's different levels of creepy when it comes to men. And, like, certain levels of creepy are worse than others. And there's certain ones where you're like, he's harmless creepy, or oof, he's murder creepy.
The harmless creepy, I enjoy as a bar patron, I enjoy watching the harmless creepy, because it's dudes shooting their shot who have no business shooting their shot.
Yes,
and it's like just watching a dumpster fire. It's entertaining.
It is. But yes, so unfortunately, these guys were the worst kind of creepy. So Chrissy voices this to Henry, and I don't know what Henry said. But Christy's actually able to duck out of the bar, like, before the men notice. I don't know if maybe they were going to pay their tab or something like that, but she's able to duck out. She runs to her car, and this is, like, such a horror movie thing, but she's trying to get her key in the door, because it's the 90s, so you don't have keyless remote, whatever it is. So she's trying to get her key in the lock, and she's frantically trying, and all of a sudden, the three guys run up. And in the episode of I Survived that I watched, and that's season 2, episode 4, Christy says she isn't sure who hit her first, but one of them just hits her so hard while she's, like, trying with her keys. And then one of them goes to take her keys, and Christy fights. Like I told you, the name of the one episode was Fight Like a Mother. She did.
These guys were planning on doing this. Because if she was able to sneak out, you would think that guys with no plan, the woman's gone.
Yes.
She's gone, right? So they, when they saw her gone, the fact that they rushed out to attack her so quickly tells me that they were planning this the whole time, which is so messed up.
I completely agree. I just got goosebumps when you said that. I hate that. But unfortunately, no matter how hard Christy fought, it was 3-1, and they overpowered her. And she says that Jimmy Joe Winters actually grabbed her by the hair and pulled her into her own truck. And they take off in her truck. And something about that, like, really gets under my skin and gives me, like, the creeps. Because it's her truck. Like, that's her safe place. Like, that's using your own property against you. Do you know what, like, does that make sense?
And it's a humongous invasion of privacy. I mean, that is your space. Like you said, that's your safe space. That's your stuff. It's the things that make you feel comfortable. So the fact that those things are being used to harm you is, I totally get it.
Yeah, it just, oof, it creeps. It just, it's horrifying. So they're driving around, and during this time, Donald Peterson puts a jacket over Christy's head, and he begins trigger warning for sexual assault. Donald Peterson begins to rape her, and she is fighting as hard as she can. And the I Survived episode, she talks about how, well, she is being raped by Donald, and she is fighting. Adam McVeigh, the 16-year-old, is just sitting there hitting her over and over and over again. And keep in mind, like, they're still driving. Jimmy Joe Winters was driving. They're cruising around aimlessly, and this is all, like, farmlands and a lot of desolate, isolated forests, and she's being assaulted sexually, physically, and all she can think about is her son, Chris, and making it home to him.
But I'm not going to give too much away, but this has eerily similar vibes to Shannon's story, which, so it's an interesting, this was an interesting case you picked, because there's, I don't think you know about that tie-in, so.
No, I didn't. So, Christy's trying to talk to the guys. She's trying to reason with them, and I think she's trying to make herself more human to them. Like, we see this with a lot of people who are kidnapped. They sort of try to relate to their captor, and they tell them about their family or their children. And it's like an attempt to reach any piece of humanity that this garbage can of a human may have left deep down.
Yeah, I've had survivors tell me that one of the techniques they used was to say the assailant's name, like try to relate to them, like you said, as a human being, to get them to make it personal, you know, that maybe they'll feel worse about doing things to you if they feel a personal connection. So it just makes them see you as a human being rather than whatever they view you as.
Unfortunately, in this case, these three vile shitbags were just not human. Like, there's no other way to say it. They were real life monsters. So Christy talks about, and she's in both of these episodes, the No One Can Hear You Scream and the I Survived, and she's talking about it, which is just, I can't even imagine how hard that has to be. So she talks about how she goes from trying to reason with them to just screaming for help and trying to fight them. And this whole time, Christy's also trying to get her bearings because she had that jacket on her head. So the jacket's off her head, and she's trying to look for anything familiar, trying to catch any kind of, like, landmark. And she starts to realize that they're on Charles Page Boulevard in Fort Smith, Arkansas, Her dad works right around the corner from like where they're driving.
Man.
Right? And she can see that there are lights on where he's working, and she knows he's currently working. He must have worked like overnights, because remember, the bar's closed, so it's really late or really early on Tuesday, maybe. So Chrissy knows this is her chance, and she gets an idea, and she tells them, I have to go to the bathroom. And she's like, please pull over. And of course, the guys start arguing. Don't let her out. She's going to run. Do let her out. She's going to pee in the truck. Like, just all this stuff. And they finally agree to pull over. So they stop. They pull over to the side of the road. The second they let her out, this superwoman runs. She takes off. And I'm sure she's thinking, like, I'm sure she can see the light where her dad was working. Like, literally, the light at the end of the freaking tunnel.
God. Can you imagine that feeling? No. Like, you are so close to safety, and but so far, every second probably feels like an hour.
There's a true crime case, and I'm blanking right now, where a woman is kidnapped and she can hear the police going past the car where she's like in the trunk. And you're just like, actually, I just heard it recently on another true crime podcast, and she can hear the police pass her. She can hear the sirens, and like, again, I have goosebumps. I can't imagine how that has to feel.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, the men do catch up to Christy. But, like, goddamn, what a brave badass. I'm in such awe of her for having the courage to do that. Like, I feel like a lot of people would be just frozen, paralyzed in fear, including myself.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. You talk so, a big game, but you would crumble.
Oh. I would. Absolutely. So the men catch up with her and they start beating her. And this part is rough. Trigger warning for extreme violence. Skip ahead maybe a minute or so. Christy talks about how they beat her and they kicked her. And it was so violent that they started breaking ribs. So
yeah, I don't have a reaction to that, because it's just, I know where this case goes. And this is just the beginning.
Well, and this is part of the reason I was hesitant to do the survivor story, and this is going to make me sound so horrible, but like, the survivor stories, you know everything that happened, what went through their mind. Like, that is horrifying. And I sound like such a little bitch right now, but like, it's so hard to hear that. Like, it's so sad when someone is murdered, but you don't, like, the evidence has to tell the story. Someone else has to tell it. You don't have the firsthand account of the horror and terror, and just, I had a hard time researching this. I texted you the one night. I was like, I'm going to be sick.
Yeah, you did. And I totally get it. I mean, the only time we hear about these things are when the killer actually confesses to his crimes. So he'll tell you what he did. And to hear it, though, from the other side, as the person who was receiving this punishment, it hits different, a lot different.
It really does. These are tough stories to get through. So they do finally stop attacking her, and they drag her back to her own truck, and they take off again, driving around. And it seems like this is the part where maybe things started to, like, reality started to settle in for these assholes, and they start arguing again. But it's like, what do we do next? So I don't know if adrenaline had started wearing off, or maybe their buzz from the bar started wearing off. I don't know. But they also realize at this point that Christy can ID them. Yep. And they're like, we need to kill her. Which, like, hold on a second. How did these people find each other? Like, it's bad enough when one person has thoughts to do this to another human, but like, how do three of them get together? Like, how do you find each other?
We talked about this, but like, you and I have discussed the couples, romantic couples that end up killing together. It's like, how does that come up to begin with? Is that on their match profile under likes, interests? Like,
I don't understand that. Like, Myra Hindley and Ian Brady, who got together
who
and was
it up?
Like, right. Like
who brought it up first? Be like,
there's important things to talk about with your partner. And I just don't understand how that can come up in conversation. But it's terrifying, as is this next part of my story. No. So they're literally talking about how to kill Christy right in front of her. And she is just begging them to let her live. She tells them that she's a mother and how her kid, like, how Chris needs her. And She tries bargaining with them. She tells them, like, I won't tell anyone what you did. Just let me go.
You're trying to see the light. You're trying to see the light at the end of the tunnel. Like, maybe there's a way out of this. So to have your attackers talking about what they're going to do to you or how they're going to get rid of you right in front of you has to be the most terrifying feeling that exists in this world.
It has to be. There can't be anything else more horrifying than that, except maybe hearing what they're going to do to someone you love. I feel like that would probably be the only thing worse.
Well, and you've already seen glimpses of what they're capable of because of how what the things they've done to you already. So when they're trying to figure out a way to end you for good, you have to be under the assumption that they're going to make good on that promise.
Of course. So, unfortunately, these disgusting animals ignore Christie's pleas, and over the next few hours, the men continue to drive, stopping occasionally, and again, trigger warning, they do stop occasionally to beat her and rape her just over and over for hours. And Christie says, like, I don't even remember how many times they pulled over to assault me. It was hours. So they eventually turn down a dirt road in the middle of Nowheresville, USA, and drag Christie out of the truck. And again, they just start attacking her over and over. And this whole time, they're still arguing about how they're going to kill her. So they begin searching her truck for some sort of weapon to use on her, which, like, how scary is that? Now they've not only stolen your truck, but now they're taking your own belongings and using them against you. And another trigger warning, extreme violence.
Blanket trigger warning. And also, you're listening to a show about murder. So this isn't rainbows and unicorns. So just, that's my two cents on
fair. So Jimmy, Donald, and Adam find a Phillips screwdriver in Christie's truck. And the three of them take turns stabbing her over and over with a Phillips screwdriver. They're holding her down and stabbing her so forcefully in the face, chest, and throat. I had to turn the episode off. Like, even the episode made it so graphic. It was so much. And
but you know what, though? It the reason I feel comfortable talking about it, and I'm sure you do too, is because Christie was on those episodes talking about it. So
yes, absolutely.
I don't feel like we're out of line here to bring these things up, because if she wasn't on those shows to recount all this, I might feel a little differently, because it's like we're kind of going deeper than surface level. So, but because she did, it's okay by me.
No, I agree. And I was about to say, like, she actually describes this next part in both shows, the I Survived episode and the No One Can Hear You Scream episode. And holy shit, she just talks about how blood is just shooting out of her mouth each time she goes to take a breath. And she realizes, like, if I don't do something, I'm gonna die here. So our amazing badass babe starts fighting. Like, wow. Like, Ed, this woman, after being beaten and raped for hours, stabbed with a freaking screwdriver, she still has fight left in her. She's got broken ribs. At this point, she had been stabbed 28 times all over her face, neck, throat, and chest with this screwdriver. It's so violent that the screwdriver goes through her throat and at one point pierces her spine.
Holy shit.
How she's still fighting is just like, oh my God.
The only kind of point of reference I can think of, obviously this has never happened to me and thank God, but have you ever heard of when a baby's trapped under a car and the mom musters the strength to lift the car, this 100-pound woman lifts the car. So I imagine that it, I don't know if that's an old wives' tale or if there's an instance of that happening, but I would think that it's an example of the body sending you every single drop of adrenaline it has to help you survive whatever awful situation you're in. So good for her. Good for her.
100%. And I really think, I talk about this later, but like, I think that she just was envisioning her son the entire time. And again, I'm not a parent, but the thought of like anyone having my dogs but me makes me heartbroken. So I can't even imagine when it's your actual child. Like, the thought of you not being there to raise them has to be, it's destroying.
At the same time, though, your body can only handle so much. So I don't care how much adrenaline you have thrown through your body. She's got a severed, a broken back. I mean, how do you overcome that? How does your will to survive outweigh the physical limitations you have now just from the attack that you survived?
The body is amazing. Like, the things that we can survive, for as fragile as we are, the same time we can survive so much. It's wild.
It just makes brown spots on your head for no reason. It's just like, hey, have a brown spot now.
Well, that's because you're old. There is a reason. So anyway, Christy's still fighting with them. She's giving everything she has. And they stop stabbing her, but they're still attacking and beating her. And one of them picks Christy up off the ground and violently throws her into the bed of the truck. And she explains how, like, the way they threw her, her back slammed into the edge of the truck bed and it breaks her back. Breaks her back. Like, she talks about the excruciating pain she felt. And then even more disturbing, she talks about what she doesn't feel.
I was going to ask that.
She has lost feeling from the waist down on the one side of her body. And to this day, or at least when the episodes I watched came out, she is like still paralyzed from the waist down on the one side of her body.
Jesus. I mean, the only silver lining is she's alive to tell the story, but holy
shit. She's alive. Yeah. But I just, and these, I don't even want to call them men because I don't feel that they deserve that title.
They're not
so
men.
They're vile pieces of shit, and they just continue to beat, rape, and sodomize her after all of this. And now Christy knows she has come to the realization that this is a fight she can't win. And if she has any chance at surviving this actual nightmare, she has to let them think she's dead. Which, coming to that conclusion, I can't. Like, that's horrifying. And we already know that these three idiots are just literal bags of, like, radioactive sewage sludge.
You have a way with words. It's your way with words that I think...
Poetic, really, if you will.
It's not poet. Now, poetry's not the word. I don't know what the word is.
Magic. Descriptive.
Yeah, descriptive, well, all right.
If you thought they couldn't get any worse, you're wrong. When the men believe that Christy is within, like, seconds of dying, these pieces of shit tell her their names and say, quote, "You fucking bitch, we want you to know who is sending you to hell."
Good Lord. That's like...
Right?
I've seen some shit and heard some shit, but that's one of the most horrifying things I've ever heard.
Radioactive sewage sludge to describe them doesn't even cover it.
Yeah,
it's too,
you know,
nice.
What? I take it back. Your way with words was spot on.
Thank
spot
you.
On. Yeah.
So this is probably the most disgustingly brutal case like I've ever come across. And at this point, the men do believe that Christy's dead or about to be. So they pick up Christy's brutally, like, bruised and battered naked body off the ground, and they proceed to throw her off the side of the road down this embankment into a ravine below.
And I'm not saying that didn't hurt, but what she had just endured, I mean, that almost had to be a welcome, you know what I'm saying? Like, that almost had,
yeah,
to be like, they're leaving me. And she probably couldn't, she was probably so numb at that,
yes,
point to everything that, like, as awful as that is, that's her get out of jail card. Like, that could be her chance at freedom now if she can just pull through.
Yes. So, well, and in the I Survived episode, she talks about how she remembers them throwing her, and she remembers hitting rocks, and she vividly remembers the leaves on the ground and how cold they were. Yeah.
That's crazy, then, that she remembers that. It's not just a blur, that it's not,
right,
all this.
Like, she describes in detail about how cold the leaves felt on her body. And then everything goes dark. And I wish I could tell you this was the end of the night for these. I don't even have a word for them, but it's not. After they brutally attack, rape, paralyze, and leave Christy for dead, They just continue their night of terror. And at this point, the sun is starting to come up. They had tortured and brutalized Christy for over 6 hours.
Jesus Christ.
Wild.
Wild, like, yeah.
So after leaving Christy for dead, like throwing her away like garbage and leaving her there, these monsters go to the salvage yard where they had worked at, and they're looking for stuff to steal and sell real quick to get money to go on the run. Unfortunately, they crossed paths with and proceeded to murder 23-year-old Earl Gene Seaton. He lived in a trailer like adjacent to the salvage yard, and they knew this guy because Earl was, he was like the salvage yard night watchman kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
And they brutally murder him. Earl's body was found later that day. So it's now Tuesday, December 10th, 1991. And when they find him, investigators originally thought that Earl had been shot in the head with a shotgun. And this is graphic, but basically his head was no longer there.
Christ, was this like, I assume that it was Earl, the nighttime security guard. See, they wanted to steal all this stuff. That like they didn't own the salvage yard. They just worked there. So his job was to be like, what are you doing?
Well, he thought they were like random people on the property, and he goes out there to confront them, and he realizes it's them. And at this point they're covered in blood. And he's like, what the hell is going on? Investigators later realized that he had not been shot with a shotgun. He was beaten to death with a bumper jack. Is the thing that holds up your car when you change the tire. And what are they, metal, steel?
Like they're not used as much as they used to be, but they're, you see them now on these souped up Jeeps. They'll be mounted to the front windshield, kind of where the hood and the windshield meet. They're these long red, they're metal and they're huge. They're basically to lift a car by the bumper. So they're really heavy duty steel rods. Lifting them is one thing. To get beaten to death with one, I can't even imagine.
I feel sick right now. Like, I didn't go into a lot of description with Earl because it was so... Even in the shows I watched, the crime scene photos were terrifying.
I'm sure, like, they're just blurs. Just.
Yes, but they showed in the salvage yard, there's all these cars, and they happened to kill him next to a white car that is no longer white because the blood. Like, these episodes were rough. I don't know how they got put on TV.
How did these guys go from a night out to a murderous rampage?
What exactly? Like, what is going on in their heads? So they kill Earl, they leave him at the salvage yard, and they start driving west. And remember, they're still in Christy's truck. Christy's blood-soaked truck. And while fleeing, they randomly pick up a hitchhiker.
Of course, because why not at this point?
And this is nuts. They tell the hitchhiker everything they did that night. Right? This poor hitchhiker is probably shitting himself, but thank God he somehow like makes it out alive. And they stop at some truck stop, and he ends up being able to like sneak off to a payphone and call 911. And I think it was at another truck stop that investigators, like, they track the call and then they figure out, like, where the next truck stop is. So they're able to catch them. They eventually catch up with them at, like, another truck stop.
Thank God. Thank God he had there could have been three victims that night.
I don't know how he survived. I'm glad that he did, but I don't know how. Like,
it seems like
at that point. I don't understand.
Because it seems like anyone in their path was destined to be a victim at this point.
Well, and the thought of that is literally like a story you tell around the campfire, like a hitchhiker gets into a blood-soaked car. Mm-hmm. Like,
you expect the hitchhiker to be the bad guy
whenever you hear the hitchhiker.
But now it's the other way around. The hitchhiker's probably like, oh, shit.
Like, yeah. Oof. Don't hitchhike, people. Take an Uber. Although sometimes they aren't safe either. So,
Uber? No.
Mm. No. All right. No. Moving on. Back to Christy. So Christy wakes up. and she's freezing cold. And I looked up the weather in Sulphur Springs, Arkansas for Tuesday, December 10th, 1991. And the low temperature that day was 0 degrees.
Oh, my God.
So like zero. It was cold. Yeah, like actually zero. She's naked. She's cold. She has no feeling in one side of her body. She had lost an alarming amount of blood. And her face is so swollen and broken. She can't see. Like, you can't even see that she has eyes. Her face is so swollen and black and blue. But this incredible, tenacious, beautiful, badass bitch somehow manages to crawl up this dirt, like, to this dirt road. So she crawls up this ravine to this dirt road in hopes of getting help. And she does get help. In the form of two little boys, a 9-year-old and an 11-year-old, who were on their way to the bus stop.
Wow. How cool, though.
Right?
Like, that she was able to, like...
find someone. And get up
there. 0 degrees yeah. Naked, dragging your broken body across the frozen ground. Unbelievable.
And Christy's in the episode, and she describes this next part. And again, she can't see anything, and she can't talk. So much damage had been done to her throat and neck, and like her windpipe had so many holes. My palms are like dripping sweat right now. God. This is so much. She's unable to speak. And I mean, she talks about how she's choking on her own blood, but she hears one of these little boys say something about, oh my God, it's a monster.
Yeah, well, that's
the... Of course! And I don't even want to imagine what she looked like. I'm sure that's burned in the memories of these little boys forever. And she's, trying to tell them, I'm not a monster. Thank God the little boys kind of knew what to do. Like, she talks about how one of them took their jacket off and covered her, which I'm like, that's so cute!
That's so sweet.
Yeah. And one of the kids' dads was an Arkansas Highway Patrol officer.
Oh, no way.
So the little boy, one stays with her, and one goes and gets his dad. And the patrolman, immediately calls police and paramedics. And he runs to the scene to save Christy. And actually, just as a side note, in one of the episodes, Christy talks about how when the dad of the kid... first comes to Christy's aid, she was terrified and actually tries to fight him. She says, quote, he was a man, and that was the last thing I wanted to see, end quote. And who can blame her?
Do you know how long it probably took her to trust men again? Any man?
If she even does?
She even does to this day. I don't know, but holy shit.
Think about it. She can't see. She can't speak. She's in excruciating pain. And then you hear a man's voice. I can't even imagine. It's terrifying. But get this shit. She realizes that she not only has her vehicle registration information, but she has one of the attacker's driver's licenses in her hand.
Oh my God, that's amazing. Right? That's amazing. Wow, and someone was definitely looking over her.
Absolutely. And we don't know how it happened. She doesn't remember why she had it or how she had it, but she had it in her hand. So she is rushed into surgery, and we know our beautiful badass babe survived. But she was so horribly injured. She had to learn how to walk again. I know that she still struggles to walk sometimes. And she didn't even get to see her son for an entire month.
Wow.
I think they were just so afraid it would traumatize him.
I believe it, yeah.
Right? So in the No One Can Hear You Scream episode, they interview retired Sergeant Jerry Pittman. And he's retired from the Crawford County Sheriff's Department. And he's like this older, southern, grizzled detective who seems strong and silent. And he's seen some shit. But he has a good heart. He looks like the guy who played Captain Smith in Titanic, the guy with the white beard.
Titanic, yeah.
The movie with, yeah.
I tend to, as a general rule, I tend to trust guys with white beards. I don't know. I feel like they, imagine, especially if they're, eating fruit off a knife. If you ever see a dude with a white beard, in the corner just cutting a mango and eating it.
It's a mango. I envision it as an apple, but go on.
An apple. It could be an apple, but trust, whatever advice he gives you, take it. He knows things. Absolutely.
100%. And that is Survival Tips with Ed.
Yeah. Trust guys with beards eating fruit off a knife.
So this hardened, stone-faced sergeant talks about seeing Christy in the hospital. And he talks about having to choke back tears. Like the first time he lays eyes on her because she was just so horribly battered. And Sergeant Pittman was so clearly upset by this entire crime. And he was so upset even talking about it all these years later. And I feel like if a crime can literally bring a hardened homicide detective to tears, like, it's definitely going to traumatize her 3-year-old. So I understand why she wasn't allowed to see him for a month.
Absolutely. These cops are human, and they don't always come across that way, but the real ones care, and these cases affect them just like you and me.
They just can't talk about it.
Right.
So in one of the shows, Christy talks about how when she was crawling up the side of that ravine, she says the whole time she could see her son standing at the top, like where the road was, like cheering her on. Wow. And I have no doubt that like a parent's love for their child could literally be the thing to save your life.
Absolutely. Someone's depending on you.
Yes. And the Sergeant Pittman, he's got tears in his big, beautiful blue eyes. And he goes, and I don't want to do a Southern accent, but I kind of do. He's like,
do it. Can you do it?
No. But he says, in my book, she's a hero. And it was such a beautiful moment. It was just like coming out of this guy. Like it was, I don't know. It just really touched me.
Well, because usually you hear it the other way around. Like even Jody last week said, Schulenberger was my hero. So it's the other way around. So it's, but that guy gets it. And from like a, just to go off topic a little bit, from a production standpoint, like those are the best kinds of investigators to work with, because we tend to find that cops are stoic. They have a job to do, you know?
Right.
But the ones that really get emotionally invested and don't just treat it like another case, they're the ones you want to speak to. They're the ones you want to go on camera because they're not just regurgitating facts, like they're testifying. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but those ones that get emotionally invested, I feel like they become more invested in the case and have more drive to solve it.
Right. But it's like a double-edged sword because you want them to be human, but at the same time, I think they have to be hardened and be able to push it out of their mind because if you don't, how can you see this day in and day out every day?
Right.
So it's like, I understand why they have to be so stoic and serious and treat it as a job. Like, I get it.
Yep.
So I know we're running long, so just a few more things. Christy's attackers, they did try to go on the run, but they were caught pretty quickly. Remember, they had told Christy their names, so they were
idiots.
So arrogant and dumb. So, of course, Christy's able to give their first names, which, by the way, she could not speak for months. She had to, like, do her, her
interviews.
Had to tell her
story. Yeah.
She had to write notes to the police, like, they would ask her a question, and she'd have to write down her answer.
Wow.
So police know who they're looking for, and the investigators go back to the crime scene. They're able to find it. And like there was like a piece of like her ripped clothing, so they knew that was definitely where it was. And they find the wallet of Adam Travis McVeigh.
Wow, that's awesome.
And they know it's his wallet because his high school ID is in the wallet.
Oh my God. Because he's 16.
Exactly. He should be in homeroom, not raping and murdering people.
Right.
Like, so they're on the run, and not only are they covered, or not only are they still driving Christy's truck, but they're like covered in her blood still. So that just goes to show like how embarrassingly stupid these shitbags are.
It's again, we've ironically covered a lot of these stories where we have young killers without fully developed brains trying to figure out how to, they're committing very real adult crimes and then frantically figuring out what to do. Todd Rizzo just panicking, digging a shallow grave.
Yeah.
Cosmo DiNardo, like, let's dig a hole with the backhoe. And just, like, it happens all the time. It's insane.
It's like your actions have consequences.
Yep.
And I don't feel like they understand that.
Right.
So Christy did not want the men to be given the death penalty due to, like, you know, her religious background. And I know the death penalty is a gray area for many people, but if anyone deserved the death penalty, it was these three.
Absolutely.
But you know what? I am in absolute awe of Christy for being the bigger person here and not wanting death to the men who almost killed her. And if it's her faith that got her through this and gets her through each day, like, good for her.
Absolutely. And the thing that I've found over the course of my career is that everyone heals differently. So some people are eye for an eye, blood for blood, you know, but others choose forgiveness because it's what helps them move on.
Yes.
And that's, so it has nothing to do with the perpetrator or what they're going to have to deal with, but it's more about what they need to heal. And having never been faced with this kind of thing, my thought on it is whatever helps you move on, then that's the right answer. That's what you do.
Absolutely. No, I 100% agree. The only thing I'm a little on the fence about is, like, Earl was murdered, Earl Gene Seton. So, like, I wonder if his parents had any insight or had any opinion, or if they were asked, you know, if they wanted the death penalty. So that I don't know.
It's two different cases, so I don't know this case well enough to know if they, but he was tried for Earl. I'm sure these guys were tried for Earl's murder and then tried for the attempted murder. So two different apples and oranges. Yeah.
You're right. So this terrible trio, they were not sentenced to death, but they were given lengthy, well, no, I can't even say that they were given lengthy prison sentences. Two of them got lengthy prison sentences, lengthy and well-deserved prison sentences. But Adam Travis McVeigh, who was originally sentenced to life in prison, he was released from prison in 2019. So that's wonderful. Round Jesus. Of applause for the justice system, guys. Good
another,
one.
Another victory.
I think it's because of his age at the time, but screw that. You this commit isn't, the adult crime, you get the adult time.
Agreed.
In regard to the other two, Donald Peterson was sentenced to life in prison and is still in jail. And from the inmate information page on him, it looks like he's still a colossal loser.
Oh.
And he's done nothing with his life except continue to be a problem. He and Jimmy Joe Winters also sentenced to life in prison. They both are rotting away.
Whatever happened with Henry? Like, that's the one thing I don't, you didn't cover what her friend?
Her friend from the bar. So I don't know. Christy talks about him a little bit at the end of No One Can Hear You Scream. And she says that she never spoke to or saw him again after this. Like, apparently he came to the hospital. Christy's mom did say that he came to see her. And I think she was unconscious. But after that, he was, like, never seen or heard from again. So I don't know if he left town. It seems crazy that he wouldn't be part of the police investigation unless he was and we didn't hear about it. But
I'm sure he was. I have no doubt he was.
Yeah. So Christy does say in the episode, she's not mad at him. She doesn't blame him. And she really wants him to know that. So hopefully he's out there and that he's okay. And I'm sure he lives with the guilt, but you know what? It's not his fault. He didn't make the decisions that they made. Mm. And he couldn't have known what was going to happen. And knowing the way Christy feels about it, I feel better saying, you know, hopefully he's okay. But to end on a more positive note, Christy ends the I Survived episode by saying that between her and Earl, the man that they killed, she knows she's the lucky one. She says, quote, "I have my life. I have my children, and I have God," end quote. And then she goes on to say, quote, "God gave me the strength to pull through it, and my son gave me the love to get through it," end quote.
Good for her. Yeah, I'm not an overly religious person, but again, whatever gets you through, if that's your driving force, then good. You found
whatever
something
gets
that,
you
that
through.
Powers you, yeah.
Yeah.
Whew. Well, thank you for sharing that story, Melissa. I know that's been done on several networks, but I'd never actually heard of that case.
Me neither.
Man, very intense, very gruesome, but incredibly empowering too. So I'm curious to see what our audience thinks.
And I want to know what they think about my descriptors, because I think they're spot on. Well, tell us what you think. Hit us up on Facebook, Insta, TikTok at Murder Unscripted, or you can email us at murderunscriptedpod@gmail.com, or you can send us a message through our website at murderunscriptedpod.com. So until next week, be a good human, be a good friend, and remember, perverts don't wear signs that say they're perverts.
I think it should be mandatory, like all those Megan Law predators. I think you should, just, as you register or change your address, you should just get a new sign just so that when we see you, we can walk the other way.
Let's just get pervert tattooed across their forehead.
Perfect.
Right?